This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki with help from New Zealand On Air. To find more local content, go to our website, accessradiotaranaki.com.
Kia ora, te whanau, nau mai, hoki mai. Welcome to another Frankly Friday on Access Radio Taranaki 104.4 FM. My name is Anne. Welcome. Marina, welcome everybody to Access Radio Taranaki, Frankly Friday. That was, of course, John Hanlon, Damn the Dam, one of the great New Zealand protest songs. And that is by way of an introduction to my guests this morning, back in for a second time this year, and a very important subject that affects us all. Welcome to Tony and Debbie Pascoe and Russell Gibbs. Tony and Debbie Pascoe, of course, are occupiers of the land at Mangapiapiki Valley, which is being, devastated is probably an accurate word, by the Awakino, Mount Messenger bypass. My apologies. Welcome to Access Radio.
Good morning, morning everybody.
Morning, good to be here.
So how's it all going?
Well, I think things are moving along. The actual works, they haven't done much this season. They've made a construction yard at the bottom, which they'll need for any option they do. They've started a couple of cuts at the south side, and they've installed a cableway, which we're not actually sure whether it's working or not, but the irony around the cableway is it wasn't part of the consent process, and it's actually breached one of the fundamental tenets of the consents and also the agreements with the landowner up there that the maunga was to stay intact, and actually the first works they undertook was to breach that undertaking.
So it doesn't stop, it just keeps going on, and I guess the court battles have continued. Yeah.
The Public Works Act court processes have hardly started. There's two separate legal processes to be undertaken for works like that, and the first one was the resource consents and the designations, which was undertaken, probably started about 2018-2019, but the land acquisition's the most important one of all, and that's in its very early stages for the Pasco whānau, which is about half the land that needed to be acquired. And the first request for acquisition was turned down by the Minister of Lands about 2.5 years ago, roughly. And we're in the very early stages of the second go from NZTA.
Okay, let's just take a step back a little bit. For those who may not be aware, and I'm sure that there are one or two who aren't aware of what's happening, let's take a little step back. We're talking about the decision to make a bypass, create a bypass through Mount Messenger, just to cut out that hill and all of those curves and the bottleneck that it presents for traffic. And Tony and Debbie Pasco own the land that is needed for the decision, for the option that they have decided to take. And Tony and Debbie and Russell and other people who are supporting them are saying, no, there are other ways around it. You don't have to take this land, which is full of ancient native forest and endangered species of native animals, and wetlands, pristine wetlands that haven't been touched, and the land has been in your family for generations, and you're saying, no, there is another more effective, more efficient option available. Is that it in a nutshell?
Yes, that is right. And people have got to remember, when this was announced on the 1st September 2017, there was one geotech borehole drilled in our valley, and I talked to the guys, and I helped the guys a lot there because they got stuck, it was wet, because they had tractors to get them the drill thing back there. And I asked the guy why they're doing it here, and they said, we're drilling here because to prove that this valley is not the place to put a road. It's too wet, it's untouched for what it is now, it's still pristine. And then 1st September 2017, they announced the option E through our valley. And you've got to remember, that was an 11th hour announcement that they had done next to no preliminary work on the eastern side of Mount Messenger. They'd done it all on the western side of Mount Messenger. It was announced by the National Party, in my opinion, to get back into power. And they never got back in power. But that, because it was announced, it's gone ahead with that side. Then they spent the next 18 months to 2 years under license to occupy with us to go in there and do a whole lot of drilling, bird walks, indigenous forest walks, water, everything else. And now they are still saying now, the project manager is still saying now, they need to get into our valley to put a massive pad down to see how much it's going to sink, to see whether they can build a road on it. So even though they've started on the southern side, and under the rules, my understanding is, none of this construction is supposed to be started, and a New Plymouth District Council have got these rules, I think it's condition 29A, that no construction is supposed to start until all land has been acquired. And they haven't properly negotiated on our land. Yes, they put a Section 18 on us, then Lynns and the Minister of Lands would not negotiate. They present the property group, which, because it's got no delegated authority to negotiate with us. So then the minister, by pushing from NZTA, put a Section 23 on us, which we've put a judicial review on that, but we think his Section 23 is not legal.
Because so Section 23 is the right to take your land.
The right, the PWA right to take our land. And you've also got to remember that the other big landowner in this project had the luxury of them saying they will not use the Public Work Act on them, so they negotiated for 4 to 4.5 years to get their settlement to put a road through here. But they said the PASCOs will put a PWA on the PASCOs to physically take their land off them. And so that's still in process. And I think Russell's going to say something in a minute.
Yeah, so you're right in your summary that the whole issue comes down to choosing an option.
Mm-hmm.
And they chose option E up through the Mangapepeke Valley, which destroys an 18-hectare natural inland wetland. It destroys the bat colony. It destroys the kiwi habitat and all the other life associated with it.
Mm.
The alternative is the $206 million option Z, which is essentially a roughly online corridor bypass, which puts a tunnel through to cut a lot of the corners out at the top and straightens up the corners on the north side and the south side. The irony is that option E, which creates all that environmental destruction, is actually $280 million so far and counting, and the alternative is only $206 million.
So
that's what the fundamental issue is. And as far as the public works, like the land acquisition, Tony's right that it's normal contracting or project management practice that you never start a project without having all the land ownership rights intact or acquisition intact, and they haven't got that. There's a fatal flaw in the acquisition of the PASCO whānau land, which is half the land they need to acquire, is that that revised option Z of $206 million was never put to the decision makers. Mm-hmm. It wasn't put, it was withheld from the NZTA board, which fund road projects. It was withheld from the Minister of Lands, who has to agree to land acquisition. So the legal challenge into the legality of the land acquisition is fundamental on the Minister didn't have the options in front of him.
It sounds like a right balls up, to be honest.
It is.
And you've also got to remember that this was also withheld. The alliance that was put in place to build this road of Hebb, Downer, Tonkin and Taylor and WSP, in the Environment Court, which we were in for 6 days, I think it was, or 6.5 days, we believe they withheld option Z from those three judges and the two commissioners. Because I can remember taking the judges, three judges and the two commissioners back to the valley, Deb and I asked them back there, are you about the environment or what are you about? And they said, about the environment. So if they'd have known about option Z, which you've got to remember is a whole kilometre shorter than the existing road, and the proposed road is only 100 metres shorter than the existing road through virgin country, a very steep country, which NZTA and everybody are agreeing with that. But if that option Z had been put forward then, it would have been probably just about been built by now, and the Environment Court would have never, ever allowed for it to go through option E through our valley to destroy ancient forests of 1,200-year-old trees, 47 species of native species, which I can't name them all, but there's a huge amount of them, and the 23 species of bird, the North Island robin breeding in there, tomtit, like yesterday, day before yesterday, there was a little wee tomtit screaming its head off. The other night, I was feeding the dogs late, and there were three kiwis all around our home on each side of the valley talking to each other. How lucky are we to have that? But they are all going to go with the road.
Just let me talk about option Z and what that entails. So that essentially, does it go over the existing road?
It's within the existing road corridor. So if we approach the Maunga from the south, heading north, there's some windy corners at the bottom.
Yeah.
It straightens those. This is an NZTA option. It's all their engineering work. What we only got it under the Official Information Act in March 2022. What they put in front of the Environment Court for the resource consents, they kept saying it cost $382 million. It actually only cost $206. So anyway, straighten up as you go north, straighten those three bottom corners on the south, you know, on the south side. And then when you get to the top of the existing passing lanes, there's a tunnel goes through, and it comes out on the second in bend on the north side of the existing tunnel. So you carry on up. So it cuts a substantial amount of corners out near the top, and then pretty much follows the existing route across the where the bull farm is on the north side, and then there's some windy corners on the north side. It straightens those. So it's a simple road to construct. It's accessible, and it doesn't affect any waterways or any wet destroy any wetlands. And about 10% of the amount of forest is destroyed.
And on hard ground. They've drilled 30 metres in my valley, and water's still coming up, and they want to put a road on it. They actually want to put a road in back at the forks of my valley, which I invite people to come and have a look, because they say a lot of the things without actually seeing what it's about, that they're going to put the proposed road on top of a stream, but declare a huge area of kaikateas and a beautiful stand of kaikateas, and there's a twin towers, I call them, some big ratas there and that sort of stuff. It's magnificent. So what Russell's talking about with option Z, it's most 90% it's on hard ground. The option they're doing, there's huge amounts of fill and huge amount of wetlands have got to be drained for this road to work. And contractors are telling me and truckies are telling me, they said it's not going to work. It's going to be a maintenance magnum of money, black hole that's going to go into this. Not just the cost of building, the ongoing cost is going to be horrendous. You're talking about in virgin country. When they first put the road over Mount Messenger, they put it on hard ground. And in the last 30 years, I think as we talked last time, they've straightened a lot of that up. I talked to a lot of truckies, and a lot of truckies absolutely love Mount Messenger because they've got a drive, they've got the power, they've got room. There's no serious accidents. That since this has started, I don't think they've written down any serious accidents. Well, yes, the odd bump and everything else. All roads are going to get this. What about all the black spots around New Zealand that are not getting fixed? The roads in New Zealand with all the potholes that are not getting fixed, the maintenance is not getting done, and yet they're starting a new road in virgin country that they say is going to be finished in 2 or 3 years. They've spent 12 months before Christmas under an OIA. They'd already spent just under $100 million for 1.5% of this job done. I think that's crazy. What about the next generations who've got to pay for this forever?
Let's have a song now, and we'll come back and talk about Doc and the animals and their stance and how we can protect them or how they are going to be affected. What should we have? Let's go for Higher by Karen Lee Andrews. I've got no idea what it sounds like. We'll find out together.
I'm
higher, right over the top of Mount Messenger, in fact. That's where we are at the moment, and people are trying to find a way through, so we don't have to go higher. We can go lower, but we can't because it's not quite working, is it? We've got the occupiers of the land that they want to go through, Tony and Debbie Pascoe, and their good mate, Russell Gibbs, who's massive support, the Gibbs family, to the Pascoe whānau. And here at the moment, just talking about the effect, the impact, the options, where we're at since the last time we spoke in February, and we're finding out a little bit more. And during that song, Debbie made the very good point, which we do need to reiterate, that you're not against the bypass. You're not against that. It's not a case of NIMBY, not in my backyard, because whatever they did, it was going to impact you somehow. Can you just expand on that a little bit, please? You didn't want to talk, did you?
No, I was trying to hide in the corner.
No way.
We've had people, comments and things, you know, going crook about it, going through your property, all sorts of rude things and everything else. But when they had five options, it didn't matter which option they chose, it was still going to go through our property. So we're not against the bypass or an upgrade or whatever. It's just for the sake of the country, the people and everything that lives in the valley, they need to choose the right option.
So the other options would have still gone through your land, but not through the wetlands, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So Choose the option with the least effect.
Right.
And not the option that delivers the most contract variations. Mm.
So if they had chosen one of the other ones, you wouldn't be protesting, or you wouldn't be holding on to it now?
No, not
potentially.
At all.
Potentially.
No, because if you had chosen the option that ironically was the cheapest and had the least effect and still delivered the full range of benefits of safety and resilience and traffic and driver time, there wouldn't have been all these issues because there's no wetland destroyed.
Right, so that's the crux of the matter is the environmental damage that this is doing. And right.
And so I don't, sorry to interrupt, I don't think it's just the environmental damage. I think it's the fact that if you've got a road which meets every criteria, meets everything that's asked of the NZTA board or the government or whatever corporate you want to put into this, if it meets all those criteria, it's a kilometre shorter for every metre of road you build, it's very expensive. But if you can put a road on hard ground, and it meets, as I said, all those criteria at a cost ratio that's going to be dollar for dollar more productive and more profitable, that the generations and the people are paying for something that's going to work. In any business, that's what you've got to look at something at. And what they're doing, they're using all other people's money to build a road and foreign into this alliance to build a road, which is just going to go on and on and on. So that's why we've dug our heels in to say, look, this is not right. The young people, I take back the valley and look at it and show the eels and all the bird life and everything in the bush and the indigenous forest. They go, we've never seen this before. So that's our argument.
Let's talk about that. So where is Doc's position in all of this? Because you're talking about endangered native species.
Very good question.
Doc generally sit on the fence, and in this issue, Doc were misled the same as everyone else, that option Z for $206 million was withheld from Doc. So NZTA got a letter of support for option E on a misrepresentation. They actually compared a different option altogether with option E. So Doc were as much in the dark as anyone else.
And have you been talking with them and negotiating with them and trying to put them in the picture, inviting them back to your land to have a look and all of that?
They've had invitations to talk. The problem that a lot of those corporate organisations have is that once they've made a decision, changing it is very difficult, even if they've made it based on a misrepresentation, because they don't like publicly admitting, oh, we've we made the wrong decision in the first place. I mean, ordinary people don't like admitting they made the wrong decision.
But nobody will be nobody wants to stand accountable for this here,
yeah,
and take the thing. Well, hang on, maybe we have made a mistake, and let's look at this. They've got the information in front of us now. Even our local politicians, when we put it all in front of them, they don't want to know us anymore, which is pretty sad because, you know, they're supposed to be working for the people.
I think we talked about this last time. You've sort of got that label now, troublemaker, and which ends up with closed doors rather than open.
And it's easy to put labels out there.
It really
is. Like, it's a common thing to that the PASCOs are termed to be protesters. In actual fact, all they are is people living on their own land in their own house, and they're being forced out, left homeless. And it's easy to put labels onto people. And it's also easy to default to the position that the most powerful body must be right. That's sort of where bullying comes from, I think. The assumption that the government is always right. And when you look at it, it's hardly ever right. Like when you get down to the detail.
As a taxpayer and a ratepayer, I know I would much rather have the powers that be admit that they've made a mistake and let's move forward and do the right thing now than to go on doggedly along the wrong way. So if you're listening, you know, you're allowed to change your mind based on new information and better information. You are.
and that cover-up becomes an entrenched culture. And once it becomes a culture, and then you get transmission gully, Mount Messenger, and you get other projects.
Interesting, isn't it? One of the criticisms that I have heard is that in your land you haven't done a whole lot of pest control. So yes, you've got all these native animals and things, but you've done very little to protect them by controlling pests and trapping possums and things like that. And part of the settlement with the iwi was that they were given funding for ongoing pest control to help control that.
Well, I'd like to answer that.
Please.
That, firstly, the PASCO whānau have undertaken pest control over a long period of time, and that's why the pest numbers are low there. The second misconception is that this iwi pest control is new and or effective. What actually happened was when the White Cliffs block went back to Trant in their settlement, they were having trouble getting pest control funded. Pest control funding was the responsibility of DOC, and DOC were negotiating hard, and it was on a year-by-year basis. They've actually agreed to, for the damage in the Manga Perepeke, to get funding more permanent instead of having to contest it every year. So the pest control that's espoused as being so wonderful out of this Mount Messenger damage is not new pest control at all. It's pest control in blocks of land that they've been doing pest control in for the last 30, 40 years. It's right. Not new. That's an illusion.
It's always really good to hear the other side. So thank you. That was the criticism that I had heard. Yeah.
And as you said, people have got criticism of us, the PASCOs, of not doing pest control. I bought my first Vanguard car for $100 by doing possums. Our daughter did possums. I think we've said this before. Did possums to buy her computer and her printer to go to Dunedin to college. So it's been ongoing for many years, and I'm still doing it now. Not as much as I used to, but the cages and the traps and that we set now don't get very many possums. And people say, "Oh, your valley's full of rats." Well, take a lot of people back to the valley, and usually you'll see rat prints and silt and all that sort of stuff around your streams and through your areas. No rat prints. Where the rat prints, they've did the survey up on top of Mount Messenger where people dump rubbish and food, and they've done a rat survey. Lots
around
of rats.
Around those lay-bys and things at the very top, yep.
Exactly.
And rubbish bins.
Yep. And my argument is that, you know, Trant or Ewies or whoever say that we're not doing it right, if that is the case, why is the critically endangered long-tailed bat in there that the Alliance blocked up the holes of something like 35 trees with building foam to get rid of them? Why was there a massive a lot of them in there. Why is there so many kiwi breeding? Why are all these species in there? Like sort of 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, a mate of mine and his 12-year-old daughter, we were back there having a look and getting a bit of pork for them for a work do, and a robin comes 6 feet from us, talking, and it was talking big time to us. But up the valley further, they'd started cutting the forest down, which really disturbed me. And these Nikau palms and pungas and trees are actually in our stream, and the stream is going brown because they cut them and letting them fall into the stream. Then they'll go in with a helicopter and pick out one punga or one Nikau at a time. Are they going to start building roads in New Zealand through helicopters now? Massive expense. So they're destroying all the wildlife's habitat in there and their homes. But where are they going to go?
What's been the impact of that foam? I think you talked about that last time when you were here. What's been the impact of that on the long-tail bats?
Well, the foam was actually put in during the daytime, so the bats in their roost were just sealed inside their roost permanently.
Yeah.
It killed them.
Wow.
So that's the impact.
Gosh.
But, you know, like Tony said, the misconception that the Pasco whānau weren't doing pest control and were somehow anti-environment. The environment values itself with the high bat population, etc., is the antithesis of that. It proves that the environment is healthy.
And that'll be interesting when our documentary that's come out have got into a international doco film festival that we went to Auckland last weekend to see on the big screen, which was pretty humbling. It's going to Wellington, I think, on the 16th, but in July it'll be put out to the public.
You jumped the gun there, Tony, but that's okay.
Oh, sorry. But it just goes to, you're talking about pest control and the environment. That explained a little bit of it. You know, if you've got wetlands and we don't put manure on the valley, we don't use chemicals, nothing like that. That's why it's intact, that's why it's environmentally friendly in the valley. So it's not a great income, but you do what you do to survive. But if we don't look after that, it's gone forever.
Very true. Let's go for a song, and we'll go for Moana and the Tribe singing Two, which means stand. Let's stand for something that we believe in here. Let's have a listen, and we'll come back and we'll find out more about the film and the making of it and all of that.
Thank you.
Gosh, that was quite stirring, wasn't it? It was Moana and the Tribe. Welcome back. You're on Access Radio Taranaki. My name is Anne, and we're on Frankly Friday with Russell Gibbs and Tony and Debbie Pascoe talking about the Maunga Pepeke Valley and the bypass that has been started. And how right or wrong it is. No, just all of that. Now, we talked just before the song, you mentioned about the film. Tell me about the film and how it came to be and the impact that it's had, please.
How it came to be is really quite a funny situation. I was out just on the northern side of Waitara and I seen these people on the side of the road with cameras filming a oil rig. And I thought, I wonder what they're up to. So I sort of wandered up the road and they took off. So I chased them and caught them and asked them what they're up to. And I told them, because this is going back 3 years ago now, I told them our story and they went, ooh. So as time went past, they got in touch. Ethan, the director fella, he rang up and we had a conversation about it and he got pretty keen. And he asked me, What's in it for you, Tony, if we make a docker on this? I said, what's in it for me is the fact if you can save the valley and if you can save this environment and put it back on the right track and let the public know. So three of the young fellas come down and spent a weekend at home with all of us and we did a whole lot of filming and talking and whatnot. And then they went away for a while because of jobs and that as well. And then they come back again 6 months ago or whatever it was. We did another weekend. So they've made this documentary, it's 18 minutes long, of the valley, the iwi of Potama and Debbie and Homoana White and myself of a bit of my life in there. So we were lucky it got into this, well they were lucky, they've done a very good job of capturing the valley. Because I can remember a guy about 3 years ago, a photographer guy from Auckland, was right up there with does photography for the Lister and all that sort of stuff. I took him back to the valley, and he said to me, I can't get this on film. He said, a photo can't show.
Doesn't do it justice.
Yeah. But these, Ethan and Micah and Connor, have done a great job of trying to get this on a documentary, and it's, you see it on a big screen, it's like, whoa, it's pristine, and it shows the mother of the valley, the big Rimu.
Where can people see it and how can people see it?
Well, it's had its premiere at Auckland a few days ago, and there's the next screening's in Wellington, I think, the 16th of this month.
Yep.
They're organising a showing in Taranaki, just got to work out the where and when. And they're looking at international exposure, and at some point in the future it'll be like readily available for anyone, but it's just how that's going to roll out, they're not sure at this stage. But there's definitely going to be a screening in Taranaki in the next few weeks.
That should have been the first one.
Well, they put it, the first one was the competition.
Right,
Docker competition,
right, okay.
So it's
right,
international in that too, so they were sort of stuck with that. Their premiere had to be within the competition.
Fair enough, okay. But yes, I'm looking forward to that coming to town. Absolutely.
And the boys also want to do a follow-up, they were telling us. They're pretty interested in doing a follow-up of how this progresses through, because they said it's such a huge thing, and their generation want to see more and want to see the right thing done here, which is pretty cool. When we went to Auckland, they had a lot of the young people there, their friends and whatever, and they were just horrified of why is this still happening in New Zealand when there's another route, when there's an environmentally friendly route and a cost dollar for dollar route that can work.
One of the things that struck me, like I said, when I was driving through last week, I went through there twice, which is the first time in ages. So it's the first time it had quite a high impact. And it seemed to me like it's had something like 10 site entrances, so like 10 little building sites that they've started. It just seems to me, like you were saying before, they don't want to turn around and they're not going to admit that they've been wrong. It just seems to me like it's too far along to stop now.
Well, it's not too far along to stop in that they haven't, they're nowhere near acquiring the Pasco land interests. The issue about them starting without land interests is actually a governance issue that the NZTA board should be held to account for.
And are they being held to account? Is it something
we've got a new chairman there, but that's not the same as holding them to account. And if we look at the debacle over the minister holding Auckland Airport shares, he was asked by Parliamentary Services for 3 years to divest them, and he hasn't done that till that's hit sort of national media. So very hard to hold people in those decision-making roles to account for their actions or lack of actions.
Okay.
As far as it being down the track, they haven't actually done much. There's a big construction yard at the start, and that.
Like you
but for whatever option you need that. The actual work they've done is negligible and could be restored. It also looks like a deliberate ploy to that concept that you said about, oh well, we've started now, it's too late, even though what we're doing is unlawful, we need to carry on. But it's all about the main reason they don't want to stop is because they've got a $280 million budget for, you know, the Downers Alliance, and the online option Z is only worth $206 million. So there's $80 million at stake, let alone what other contract variations they intend to apply for in the future. So it comes down to money.
Although, yes, there's more cost involved, but there would be more cost involved in that too. That's not all profit, the difference. It wouldn't be all profit for the road companies.
There'll be a fair profit in the road company because the biggest profits that construction companies get are contract variations.
Of course, which I know to be true from my work in building.
Yeah, that's come out lately in publicity.
What's your plan B? Do you have a plan B?
It's an interesting question, really, because under the PWA, they can take the road strip off us and the temporary occupation, which takes out most of the valley. Our house would be untenable. The Environment Court says that. On the PWA section 23, there's no offer of a home. There's no offer of any accommodation for us. So we've got nowhere to go. The money they're offering won't even pay one of my mortgages. And of course, it's risen a huge amount through this to try and carry us on and fight through, well, not fight, negotiate, court. True court things,
stand
the cost.
Up.
Stand up and say hello. Hang on a minute. This is New Zealanders fighting for their rights and their land. And how many other New Zealanders have gone through the same situation? How many other New Zealanders have just had to walk away because of no support, no money? We've got no money either, but we've got plenty of support. So we're very, very lucky. Plan B. We're fighters. We'll survive. Well, hopefully we will. It takes a massive toll on us. It's really taking a big toll on us, physically and mentally and financially, but mentally and physically it's taking a big toll. But we'll find a way. You always got to look at probably the light at the end of the tunnel, that there is going to be some good out of it somewhere. I think we've won in some ways in the fact that I believe under their consent, they want to take 144 hectares off us and leave us with 11 hectares. And they can't do that under the Public Works Act. So the agreements with other people and contractors, landowners or whatever it is, they've gone and done all these agreements and never approached us about all these agreements or never negotiated with us over these agreements. And I think that's pretty sad. So the bullying in this situation has been huge. I never thought in my life you'd have people come into your home and tell you, you can't live in this house and you're going to have nowhere to live and we're going to bulldoze it and who the hell are you? Because that's what they said to me. Who the hell are you? Nobody knows Tony Pascoe. And I don't want people to know Tony Pascoe. I just want to live and for their family and look after what we got. So, big question you asked. It's still in the making. It's like baking a cake. It's still getting cooked.
We're still mixing the ingredients, I think, from the sound of things.
If plan B is the effect of not achieving option Z, which is the least damaging option, then I think plan B isn't a good plan on its face, in that, like Tony said, they'll have nowhere to live. So plan B is not really an option either.
No.
They've got no option but to defend the taking. And the court, the Chief Judge of the Environment Court put Crown Law and the Minister of Lands on notice for the inequality of arms, which means that the Pascoe's position is so bad, like there's been so much pressure on them over such a long period of time in comparison with NZTA and the Lynns, that it's a miscarriage of justice. Mm. So...
Over 18,000 people signed the petition, and a hell of a lot more still want to sign a petition because they're starting to find out the very untruths and the inequality and the things that's happening now. That's in front of a select committee. They put it on hold a little bit because of the court, of us being in court. But we think they've got that wrong because we're in the court system under the PWA, not the environmental RMA. So that petition is about the RMA and what they're doing and to look at option Z. So Eugenie Sage and a few others are still looking into that and they're still pushing to get this to be looked at and people to be held accountable and say, get the truth out here because it's not too late.
Debbie, how are you holding up?
It's very hard. Life's nothing like it used to be. We've had that many people come demanding and what have you, no appointments, NZTA, you know, people, contractors, what have you. You hear a vehicle at the gate, you're on high alert. Who's that? What do they want? You hear the dogs bark. Who's that? What do they want? You know, you don't sleep too well.
Sounds
we
tough.
We cope because we've got tough. Good because friends. And
what other choice do you have? Absolute. No, actually, no. What other choice do you have?
No.
Mm. How can people throw in their support? And this is the key thing that I missed out in our last interview in February, and my apologies for this. How can people join your campaign? How can they show their support? How can they get behind this?
Well, there's a Give a Little page being started. That's one way. Writing to your local council or New Plymouth District Council, writing to the Minister of Lands, writing to NZTA, their CEO, etc. That's all a big help. Just publicity is a big help and public support's a big help.
We've got the page, We Stand for the Mangapikipiki Valley, isn't it? Save the Mangapikipiki Valley. We Stand With You is another page. Deb and I haven't got a computer, but these other people around the country have started those. Social media, I don't know very little about social media, but it seems like social media is a great way of spreading the word. Media, TV3 have assured me they want to come down and have a look, hear our other side of the story. Duncan Garner, he's interviewed me twice, last week or 10 days ago it was. He actually got in touch with the filmmakers to see if I'd do an interview. It was just a phone one. We were going to do a Zoom, but that didn't work, phone one. He's horrified, and he wants the New Zealand public to know about this, to people to be held accountable. Other media outlets got in touch. We're lucky to be in here talking to you. It's just trying to inform people that there's two sides to every story, And in my point of view, it seemed like nobody was sticking up for the environment. Nobody was sticking up for the ancient forest. That ancient forest was there well before man ever moved into New Zealand and into that valley. And there's big trees there that are on the side of the wetlands that haven't been milled. Why are they there? You know, it seems like DOC have let the environment down and the people down. Forest and bird, the same. Is this all about money? And people say how good this pest is going to be because they're putting all this money in pest control. We've done it all our lives. So has Russell. So has a lot of people in our district do that to survive. I think it's DOC's job to do that. I don't think a road should... To put a road through that NZTA to fund pest control for many years for millions of dollars, and every day or every week now you hear about people dying on New Zealand roads because of black spots, no maintenance, everything else. Their job is roads, not pest control. Get their priorities right. Our iwi and our people in the district, we could do the pest control using better forms and better way because we know the country. You know, millions of dollars that NZTA are spending on this to put it across the board how good they're doing, I don't think it's right. People's lives need to be saved on roads. They need to be looked after.
But all this, there's quite been quite strong messaging coming out of NZTA on this pest control issue. Firstly, all of this project is done is changed the budget that the pest control funding here has come from the DOC budget to the NZTA budget. There's nothing new, it's just changed the government department that's paying it. What you're talking with Tony just before about, the level of public support and support from institutions is growing all the time, like support in Parliament and support from the media and support from the general travelling public, and it's definitely growing. The message is getting out there.
Good. We have just about come to the end. I'd just like to ask you all if there's one thing you'd like to say to leave people with.
I think New Zealanders need to stand up for what is right, because if you don't stand up for it effectively, you're condoning it, and you're changing it. Changes our culture.
Silence is consent.
Silence is consent.
People hear lots of things, lots of stories. We hear lots of stories about us. It's absolutely amazing, but don't believe everything you hear.
We've got less than 10% of the wetlands left in our country. Our ancient forests are diminishing. They want to plant whole lots more pines and everything else.
We've seen what pines do in Hawke's Bay.
We see what pines are doing. And the amount of slash, of the native slash that they're going to be falling for this Mount Messenger job when they get more into our valley, and when, it's not if, it's when we have big rainfalls, which we did in 2001, that the whole valley was covered in water. If they had been, if they were, I don't know, 50 times more advanced what they are now, the whole of our Tiriti Tongariro will be covered in slash and silt. So please, people, let's look after our wetlands and our ancient forest. We know there's an online route. Let's push for that. Get behind us, but not get behind us, get behind the environment and our young people coming up. Look after them, because they're the one that's going to be paying for the bullshit that's happening now.
Tony and Debbie, Russell, thank you very much for your time this morning coming in. It's been, I won't say a pleasure, it's been engrossing, it's been captivating listening to you, and it's left me feeling angry and frustrated as it did last time. Let's see what we can do. Let's get behind these people and do what's right. Thank you very much. It's the weekend, it's Friday. Whatever you're up to this weekend, stay safe, be happy, have an awesome weekend, and Ka Kite Anō.
This show was made at Access Radio Taranaki in New Plymouth, thanks to New Zealand On Air. For more local content, search for accessradiotaranaki.com.